Hey, if you've listened to this podcast before, welcome back. And if you're new here, we're very excited to have you listening in. My name is Leah, and I'll be our host today for the Prescription Playbooks Tackling the Opioid Epidemic podcast. Our goal is to reduce and eliminate overdose deaths in Illinois through empowering and educating our youth, athletes, adults, and community members. Today, we'll be talking about preventing substance use and misuse from a community lens, as well as how we can learn more about the generational patterns of substance use and misuse, and importantly, what we can do to disrupt these patterns. If you've tuned in for one of our last episodes, then you may have already know a little bit about the organization that our incredible guests come from. We're joined today by some team members from Take Action Today, which we're very excited to have with us. Take Action Today is a faith-based nonprofit community organization providing crucial substance use and misuse prevention resources in some of our southern counties of Illinois. Their work spans across community work, including prevention, as well as engaging with recovery-oriented systems of care, also known as ROSC, if you're familiar with that. And they do this to provide support to all of the communities that they serve. Their work positively impacts and continues to support those communities while reducing stigma around substance use and misuse through their resource sharing. So I just did a lot of talking. I'm going to stop a little and get started with some introductions here. In any order that you all would like, would you like to share your names as well as what your title is and what you do?
My name is Tia Farrell. I am the program coordinator for the Southern Illinois Youth Empowerment Network, which is Take Action Today's youth prevention program. I'm a person in long-term recovery, and we do youth prevention in my program.
Hi, I'm Jessica Schultz. I am a youth engagement specialist for Take Action Today and for the CIAN program, and I'm a person with lived experience, just trying to help youth to prevent them from things that I've went through.
I'm Danielle Kreger, and I'm also a youth engagement specialist with Southern Illinois Youth Empowerment Network. We do a lot of community outreach, which is my favorite part about my job. I love talking to people about my lived experience and about how we really hope to prevent things like we've all went through in the future.
My name is Simone West. I am a youth engagement specialist. I'm with CIAN as well, of course, the newest here. I'm basically like the closest thing to a teenager they could get. So I relate really well with the kids because I'm basically...
Jerome brings us a very diverse, good aspect to how to get into the teenage mind because the rest of us are a little bit older. So.
Yeah.
Oh, not by that much. No, it's good. It's good to have a team of folks who have a lot of different lived experiences as well as work experiences to cater to the communities across those age ranges and experiences as well. And so as we kind of transition into some of the questions, all of that experience that you have will be really beneficial. So what are some ways that you share prevention material and content? I noticed youth programming come up a lot. So what are some of the ways that you interact with you through your content, and what are some of the challenges that you see when you provide those resources?
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges is misinformation, definitely. And we do most of our sharing through Facebook. We do a little bit with TikTok, but like Tia mentioned, we're all kind of old. So we are still navigating that application. But, you know, attention fatigue is another huge issue that we have whenever we're doing assemblies in schools. And then ensuring materials are accessible, culturally relevant, and age appropriate, but also remaining evidence-based. So we want to make sure that we're getting information correctly, age appropriate, and that it's factual.
Yeah, all of those things can be really big challenges. So what I'm kind of hearing is these sort of two separate concepts. Like one is, you know, attempting to have a social media presence, which my team also works with. I agree with you. TikTok is quite a challenge. I feel like you have to have a really short turnaround for videos, and you have to sort of be really great in a very short sort of context and format. But you also spoke about some of the assemblies and some of the misinformation that you might encounter. What does an assembly or sort of like a classroom setting look like? And what's like sort of something, a piece of misinformation someone or a student might share that comes up often?
What?
Yeah.
Vaping.
I mean, vaping is probably the one that we get the most with misinformation, that it's safer than smoking cigarettes or that it's not as much nicotine as smoking cigarettes. Vaping is a hard topic for most of our kids because a lot of them are already vaping. So there's not a lot of prevention for that until we get into the younger demographics, but it's more of like minimalistic and very early intervention for the vaping.
And matter of fact, I think you touched on a topic that my colleagues and I are talking a lot about right now. Vaping remains a really big topic, mostly because the market is evolving a lot faster than we get to react. And so we're seeing all kinds of things in vapes. We're seeing cartridges that have THC, that have a whole host of things. And those are the substances that we know of, right? They could contain a whole slew of other things that we may not be as aware of, or that can also be harmful, that aren't necessarily things we classically consider drugs. And so it's a conversation a lot of us are having. Have you had any particular like project or social media campaign that you are excited about with regards to specifically addressing vaping?
We haven't really done any targeted campaigns for vaping.
Education.
Yeah, we mostly do education because there's a really strong presence in our area for tobacco disparities. So SIH hits that very hard. We did do a campaign that I really, really liked. So One Pill Can Kill, we did that campaign and we ran it in our schools, and that one was fantastic. I can speak on that if you want me to.
Oh, please. Yeah. Tell us more about what that was like and what made it such a positive experience for you.
So for me personally, I am a person in recovery from fentanyl. So One Pill Can Kill was very close to home for me. I really enjoyed giving big, scary facts. And I know that that sounds kind of strange to say, but I feel like if the students don't get to have that visualization of what we were talking about, they're not really going to get it. We did kind of a neat activity where whenever they first came in, like we handed them all a piece of candy, and about halfway through the assembly, we asked them how many of them ate it and why they felt it was safe to, and then kind of reverted that back to what we were talking about. And you know, just a small amount of fentanyl being on the tip of a pencil can be deadly. So that campaign was a lot of fun for us. Does anybody else want to talk on it? But
I think it was very impactful.
Yeah.
It was an entire week ran campaign, and we went in twice that week and did two different assemblies. On that Friday, we ended it. And I think that activity, while a lot of schools in our area probably would have objected to that activity, the school we went to was alternative and they were super pumped. And the teachers even ate the candy. And then yeah, we had to be like, okay, well, now you possibly overdosed. And it was a big realization for the entire assembly on top of the educators that were there.
Yeah. And it was one of the first times that some of those kids even met us. So not only are they taking candy from us, but they're eating it because they're assuming they can trust us because somebody they know knew us and trusted us. So the whole thing kind of was full circle, and it really was impactful, and we enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. We do a lot of experiential activities when we do programming as well. And that's one that I hadn't thought of that I think you hit the nail on, in terms of not only the One Pill Can Kill and how little fentanyl it takes, about 2 milligrams to overdose, but also where you get what you consume, right? It's not just a medication, but also what are some other sources? We talk about public settings a lot being a really common place that you could encounter, as you're very well aware, you could encounter a pill that contains a lethal dose of fentanyl. So it's really great to hear that there are some communities and schools that are not only interested in programming, but also really engaging with students on those topics.
So not only did we ask halfway through, like, raise your stand up or whatever if you ate your candy, we also said, how many of you gave your candy to your friend beside you and they ate it?
Yeah.
Showing them the significance of that friend, maybe not knowing, but I don't eat this kind of candy, so you're going to eat it. And many kids was like, oh, I ate these three people's candy. Well, look how easy that is for you to take something that you don't know what's going to happen at the end.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I hadn't even thought about that expansion of it, but you so well, you know, really touched on all the different ways that someone could access something. We also share a lot about, you know, someone taking a medication and a friend also taking their medication, even if they're not prescribed it, or maybe they might be, but it's not the same exact one. So I really like hearing that analogy. And that's something very tangible that students will remember because it's something they actively did. And so we love to hear about activities like that. Awesome. In our last episode, Megan and Tori shared with us some valuable information about sort of the normalization of substance use in their communities, and maybe some of you have similar experiences or understand the role that that plays in decision-making, both for our young people as well as for adults. And when we do prevention work, we encounter the reality that substance use can be very generational. It's generational for me. It's one of the reasons I don't use any substances. Almost all of my family members have some history of substance use. Some of them have substance use disorders or still are actively seeking treatment or in recovery. And research really tells us that substance use is impacted by those genetics. If you have a parent or grandparent that has diagnosed or even undiagnosed substance use disorder, that can play a really big role in whether or not you use substances. So how have you seen the impact of generational substance use in your work? What have, you know, community members or young people told you about their experiences with this?
So substance use doesn't happen in a vacuum, you know, and it's definitely rooted in unresolved trauma and lack of access to resources, normalized behaviors that are passed down through families and communities, like you just mentioned. So approaching it through, like, you know, prevention first and a trauma-informed lens instead of kind of trying to do it how we were exposed to it as kids, you know, through programs like DARE or other things like that. I think that it's more impactful to let people know that through those behaviors that are being passed down from their families, that it can be traumatic and that there's a reasoning, you know, instead of just letting somebody assume that I'm a drug user because my mom's a drug user, or I'm a drug user because my brother's a drug user, or this is what's expected of me, so this is why I'm doing it. And then talking about the behaviors and the reasoning behind it.
I think it's important to, you know, to let the youth know that it's a disease. Like, so I grew up with a bunch of family members using, my parents using, and I just thought it was what you did when you grow up. You know, I thought it was like a normal way of life. Well, then I fell into the addiction part of it and was lost for like 20 years, you know, and just letting them know that they don't have to follow that same, you know, that same path, and that it's a disease, their parent, you know, and also helping them to understand, you know, why that person is addicted is important too.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think you touched on really important points, and also, you know, we appreciate that you're being vulnerable and, you know, sharing some of that lived experience. I think it's one of the ways that we connect, but it can also be really challenging to talk about, because there's, you know, understanding that it's something that's happening to you, but there are lots of other factors, right? Why would someone use, making sure that we're really taking into account that human element, being empathetic and acknowledging the disease portion of it, I think is a really important part of learning more about resources, but also feeling safe enough to access them. I think that that can be another really big challenge. Have you all seen stigma play a really big role in how people think about substance use? I noticed that emphasis on the word disease, which I think is great and we really encourage, because it is a disease. But it sounds like part of why you're saying that is to reduce the stigma around it.
I think that being from, I'm sure it's like this in other places, but most of us has been in Southern Illinois the gist of our lives. And I feel like it is the small communities, it's the small-mindedness. And I feel like we can go in some places and we can be praised and appreciated for using our past to educate and try to make things better. Not just with the youth program, with the entire Take Action Today, because we're all people with lived experience in some manner. Some people embrace us and some people, there's that stigma, and we will just possibly never be more than what they think we are or what we did years ago, no matter what we do today or what degrees we come up with. It's a hard fact, but it's kind of the thing where they either love us or they hate us. And all we can do is try to keep positive and change their mind. And that's what we focus on.
By educating and creating awareness.
Yeah, because and like you said a minute ago, you know, calling it a disease and giving it a name or giving it a medical condition instead of a moral failing, I think will take away the limitations that some people have to have access to services.
Yeah. I think that's a really big part of it too.
I was going to say, like, stigma plays a role, because I feel like people are also like less likely to get help because they feel like their family won't support them if they are addicted to anything, you know, like they feel like if they find out, I'm going to get kicked out, this or that will happen. And like, they won't try to get help. They feel like no one will try to help them. They feel like the entire world is against them. And I feel like once they have kids, that continues. Once their kids see them doing drugs and they're like, oh, this, like, my dad or my mom is always sad. Well, she takes these drugs to feel happy. Maybe I should do it. And then once they're addicted, and maybe the mom or dad is done being done with their addiction, or their mom or dad isn't here anymore, they try to get help from other people, like their friends, and maybe their friends don't do the same things as them, so they shun them out, they push them out. And I feel like that's a really big barrier for people that are addicted to certain drugs, because they have no one, they feel like.
Yeah, and I mean, if you grow up in a home without healthy coping skills being taught to you or shown to you, you don't develop them. You develop the coping skills that you're shown. And being shown, you know, substance use as a form of medication, I mean, that's something that you're going to carry into adulthood. And unfortunately, you know, you're forced to face an addiction.
Yeah, I think you all touched on really important points, just sort of, you know, really emphasizing what you're saying, that isolation can play a really big role in the choices that you make, equally so the community, right? If you feel like everyone around you is making the same decision, you feel more compelled to do that. And we're talking a lot about sort of the communities that we have, how that impacts the choices, and then the resources that you have access to. And I know that Take Action Today is a faith-based organization, which I think is really an important part of not only supporting communities, but meeting folks where they are. And I know that faith can mean different things for different people. And so I was just curious how faith impacts the work you do and how you see it impact the community members that you interact with. And please feel free to sort of answer the question however you want to, right? It can mean different things to different people.
So our faith informs our values, not our barriers. It guides us toward compassion, dignity, and service. We meet people where they are. It's Matthew 25:35-40. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, and thirsty, or give you a drink? And when did we see you as a stranger and welcome you? And he will answer them, truly, I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of my brothers, you did it to me. So basically saying that, you know, as you're doing these things for everybody around, for anybody, that you're serving the Lord. Our faith in action has helped us build trust in communities that may be hesitant to engage with, you know, like traditional systems. And it allows us to combine accurate evidence-based information with a message of hope and belonging.
I was going to add something. I think that our faith helps us outreach and get in spaces that otherwise we may not be able to get into. Our faith for helping people, for educating people, and for helping those people that others may not want to help. We have so many partnerships with churches and other organizations that, you know, maybe if we weren't faith-based, they may not want to hear us. But since we are a faith-based organization and we do all have a pathway, they tend to listen and partner with us and believe in us and see things from a different lens once they meet us and hear us.
I think that's really powerful to have that capacity to, you know, build empathy and to share and to have that common ground that, you know, you both have shared goals, that you are both really invested in the community, are both really invested in spreading not only hope and faith, but also speaking to folks in a way that connects with them, that you also connect with. I think that's a really powerful way that we can not only bring hope and evidence-based programming, but also continue to, you know, reduce the stigma around what it looks like to have access to resources. And even where resources are found, I think it's really powerful when churches and other faith-based organizations house those resources. Because when we think about who we want to reach out to when we're experiencing a challenge, for a lot of us, church is the first place we think of. That's where we want to go when we want to feel safe, when we want to feel like we're in community with other people who share our values, when we want to, you know, connect. And so if resources are there and available when you're experiencing something, I think that really increases the opportunity that people will engage with what you have to share. So I think that's great.
I think too, just the compassion to show towards anybody that needs help and, you know, helping no matter who you are, where you're at, what you believe, you know, we just try to serve everybody.
That's really great to hear. It warms my heart because I do work mostly in the central and southern part of the state, and I feel like one of the reasons I love connecting with Take Action Today is because you all are so compassionate, because you all are so ready to provide those resources or have a conversation or, you know, jump on a Teams call with me and do this, even though it's a little scary or maybe, you know, out of the ordinary for something that we might both do. So I love hearing more about what you all have to do and the compassion that you can extend. And excitingly, our most listened to episode of last year was the last episode we had with Take Action Today, which was really, really happy about it. And I call that a personal win because I love not only highlighting all the great evidence-based work that we do, but like all of you were saying, continuing to make those connections and having folks listen to us and bringing more folks to the table to, you know, maybe someone doesn't need a resource, but they know someone who might, or they have a connection to someone who can share the resources that we have, or even just change one person's mind around the disease that is substance use disorder, and just really continue to shift that narrative and maybe get into more schools or talk to more young people or do more of those experiential activities. And so I was curious, for our audience members, what are some ways that they can support the work that you're doing in preventing substance use or misuse? Are there any ways that community members can engage with you?
Obviously, giving us a platform to start. If there are any community organizations that have a youth group that they want us to speak with, or just inviting us in or allowing us to make connections with their youth, no matter what the organization is or the school. And then outside of that, you know, engaging in stigma reducing conversations, you know, partnering with us as organizations or schools, volunteering, donating, and advocating for evidence-based prevention and recovery services in their communities. That's huge. Advocating for evidence-based things, period, you know, but especially when it comes to prevention.
And too, just letting people know, like if you have, you know, somebody that's struggling with substance use, whether it's a youth or not, then let them know that we're here so we can help them.
Are there any upcoming events or things you all want to share about? We'd be happy to share it here and then also, you know, put it up on some of our other platforms. Is there anything coming up that you're excited about telling the community about?
Well, CYAN, which is our youth program, last year we held our first annual Prevention Day and back to school event, which both offered community resources, free food, free clothing, vendors, bounce houses, and the back to school had school supplies, of course, haircuts. This year we have decided to combine the two and hopefully serve around 1500 this summer. So we're hoping that'll be massive.
Yes, we just set a date for
it. We're planning to be big. So July 18th, we haven't secured a venue exactly yet. We're kind of going back and forth, but we plan for it to be big. And unlike some other events in our local communities, they're like, oh, well, this can only be for this school district or this county. We will serve every county in Southern Illinois is welcome.
No proof of residency. You can come as you are from where you are.
We're super excited about it.
Awesome. That sounds incredible. I mean, that's a huge goal. And we want to completely support you all getting there. And I think you absolutely will. You're getting the word out really early. You've got this platform, and I'm sure there's tons of promotional materials and ways that folks can get involved. I'm sure we'll have some sort of a donation put together as soon as you have that information. We'll happily share it. I believe either a team member of mine or myself have been to one in the past, and it was just a really great way to get everyone together. And you're absolutely right. Some of them do require you to show, to prove that you're in a specific county. And it's really great to hear that it's like a come one, come all. If you can make it there and, you know, have some access to resources, that's fantastic. And then folks also get to meet all of you lovely people, or some of you in person, depending on who's going. So that's super exciting too.
Well, it's an all hands on deck event usually. Plus more hands. It's a lot to put together. Last year we separated them two, and I think it was a lot. So this year we decided to just combine both events.
So we can make ourselves double crazy for a shorter amount of time.
Shorter period of time. I'm sure the office will just be overflowing with things up until then, and you'll just be super excited to have, you know,
don't
to get rid
the
of
fire
all
marshal to come by.
We won't if you don't, so that's perfectly fine. Are there anything else? Is there anything else you want to share with our community as we sort of sign off here? Is there anything that you didn't get to share that you're really interested in saying?
So right now, what we do is we offer specific youth prevention curriculums in the school, and each school tells us what they need, and we create that and implement it weekly. Also, we got asked today to start implementing and partner to do an after-school program for truant youth. So we will be starting that. We are also a teen mental health first aid site, so I will now be an instructor to teach teen-on-teen mental health first aid. And we are currently working on connecting with the juvenile justice system to help with probation.
Awesome. Okay, so I heard lots of things, and I'm going to emphasize all of them because they're super important, especially for any folks listening from our school districts. There are lots of things that the Illinois State Board of Education not only requires students to know, but also really wants to emphasize educators to share, because they're really important for preventing substance use, but also importantly, encouraging healthy behaviors and decision making. And Take Action Today can provide you with all those, and it sounds like they're completely customizable, which is fantastic, which means you get to pick and choose the things that you want to emphasize with your students and build those healthy communities together. And getting also involved with the juvenile justice system is really important for making sure that we have healthy communities, safe communities, and just really encouraging all those healthy behaviors. So that's fantastic. Very, very exciting.